It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Second hour of Light the Tower here on the Horn. Craig Way, Jeff Howe with you. Stu Daniel alongside. Clean up from hour number one in a moment, but first you have some other news.
Yeah, Snoop, get your thoughts on this. A little bit of a more breaking local high school football news. We got another job opening, another head coach opening
another
in the
one?
Area. Daniel Hunter has resigned as the head coach at Anderson. That, according to Matt Stepp, my good friend at Dave Campbell's Texas Football. So Anderson is open.
That's tough because they're in 11-5A with like Cedar Park and Georgetown. So it's hard for Anderson to get over the hump. And I know the kids really liked Coach Hunter. So it's kind of sad for the community, but they weren't exactly winning. So.
There it is.
I don't mean it like that.
Add that on to your job openings with Vista Ridge and Cedar Park. Anderson now open.
Yeah, absolutely. Clean up from hour number one. Our good friend, Police Chief Ken, too. He's the one who, by the way, said this Austin is not the same Austin. We moved here from Corpus in 2012, and Austinites are fed up with it. There's no doubt. He said, speaking of inconceivable, would Archie Manning have visited Texas if Tommy Boy was still the head coach, asking for a friend?
Arch Manning.
Yeah. You meant Arch Manning. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Chief, I thought for a moment you were saying if he'd been the coach instead of Coach Royal, would Archie Manning have visited Texas? That was never going to be in doubt. He was going to go to Ole Miss. I just guessing.
That's all Sark. Yeah. That's all Sark.
Because that started when he was still at Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what's interesting on the Manning family? Until I went to Oxford in 2012, I thought the 18-mile-an-hour speed limit deal, I thought that was like a rib or like urban legend. But no, it's legit. If you drive around the Ole Miss campus, the speed limit is 18 miles per hour.
Yes, it is. Went there for the Super Regional 05. Speed limit is 18.
Because of Archie Manning. That's how much clout the Manning family has in Oxford.
Just so you'll know that. Somebody else said slow bumper for who again? No, I think that might be your internet speed. Just the regular, it's our regular hour open.
There was some sort of Snoop. What test did we just have at the top of the hour? Like
emergency alert system.
Yes. Okay, yeah. That probably was it too.
Do you remember the old days when you would watch television and all of a sudden it would... You'd have the disruption for the EBS alert emergency broadcast. So now it's emergency alert system. You remember that, Jeff? Mm-hmm. When you were watching, and all of a sudden you would, it'd be at 4:40 in the afternoon. I'm home from school, and I'm watching the Flintstones or something, in syndication. And all of a sudden, you'd have the thing just go, beep. Then it'd go. This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. This is only a test. And then for another 20, 30 seconds, and then it would go, this has been a test of the emergency broadcast system. The broadcasters in your area, in voluntary cooperation with the FCC and other authorities, have developed this system to keep you informed in the event of an emergency. If this had been an actual emergency, you would have been instructed where to tune in your area for news and official information. This concludes this test of the emergency broadcast system. And then it would go back to the Flintstones or something like that.
The Flintstones.
Mm, yeah.
Were you a big Flintstones guy growing up, Craig?
I liked the reruns of it. If I was watching, or Gilligan's Island or something, it'd be on
the
at
Love
the time.
Boat?
Well, it wasn't in syndication by then. I was a little older than that before the Love Boat happened. You know, it was still in first run, on ABC on that. So anyway. So somebody else says, no radio signal. Talking about the slow bumper. Well, that it's different when you're talking about different things. The radio signal is different from the bumper on the music. That's those are two different things on that. Big Mike wanting to know, Snoop, did you hear that Coach Rowland from LBJ has decided not to retire and will continue to coach the boys' basketball team? Yeah.
My gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do know that the Flintstones was based on the Honeymooners, as somebody just texted in. Absolutely. Victor says, I got here in Austin in 1963. I was 5 years old. I came in from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was expecting to see tumbleweeds and people riding horses. The outskirts of town was St. John to the north and Red River to the south. I remember wishing that Austin was a bigger town. Be careful what you wished for. Somebody said, how ironic you brought up that test just before you guys came back. Yeah, the test went out over my phone. Yeah. So there we go. Craig said syndication. Yes, I did say syndication. I definitely did.
You ready to get the sausage gravy gate?
I'm about to. Okay. Somebody else said, I entertained my elementary school age kids the other day when I was trying to describe and emulate the sound effect of what dial-up internet was in the 90s. Remember that? That.
I still love that noise that the dial-up internet used
to
have.
Yeah, it was something else. So this was a story that this really started because yesterday we had somebody ask me for restaurant recommendations in Omaha. And they were going to go for the first time. And I said, yeah, we'll come up with some tomorrow. And just rattling off the top of my head, I can tell you, obviously, there's many, many, many great steakhouses and Italian restaurants in Omaha. Because, and I've told this story before in case you didn't know, there were several for a long time in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, into the 2000s. There were several Italian steakhouses. They were steakhouses. They were advertised as steakhouses, but they were basically Italian restaurants that also did steak.
Yeah, that concept, it still exists in some parts of Omaha, and it's still kind of, I'm not complaining, it's just, I was like, huh.
It's different. It's interesting. And here's the genesis behind it. The most celebrated of these was Mr. C's. And Mr. C himself was a wonderful guy and a great host. There were several Longhorn baseball team dinners in there when Coach Gus was coaching. They had the whole downstairs area. It was supposed to be a victory dinner in 85 when they lost to Miami. Greg Swindell can tell you about that, you know. And Bill Little can tell you the stories about that. But they had many, many, many team dinners there and things like that. But it was mainly a hangout for fans. And this place was just, it started out as a six-stool drive-in restaurant called the Royal Boy back in 1957, where Mr. C, Sebastiano Caniglia was his name, bought the place. Eventually became a small steakhouse restaurant. It was on the north side on 30th Street. And then grew and got bigger and larger and bigger and larger and downstairs, and it just kept sprawling out. And then they had this big outside piazza, this big plaza area with statues, Italian statues. And he always hosted with an old world charm and would come and sing at your table. He would do that. And Mrs. C, she really was the brains behind the operation. He used to say, I have to keep working. She's older than me and she's still working. He was this wonderful guy. Wonderful guy. Loved the media, loved all the people. And a lot of money was spent at his place by those who would come in. So it was kind of sad. He had several kids. He was in his early 80s and still working 6 days a week.
Jeez.
And his wife was, too. I remember right before he, quote-unquote, retired and closed down, I want to say it was like 2007, maybe, he told me that his kids had really been urging him, Pop, you need to retire, whatever. And so he finally agreed to do it, and he, passed away within a year or so afterwards. It was a shame. And then the restaurant was sold and torn down and all that sort of stuff. But there are several places like that in the Omaha area. There was the Venice Inn, which is Eli Cornelius, who basically was a cousin of Mr. C's. There were a lot of the Cornelia family who were related that had different places.
I forgot the place we went to, but it was after the in 14. It was after the practice at Creighton. The writers we went, myself, Brian Davis, Kirk Bowles, Mike Finger. I'm trying to remember, I think somebody else was there, but we went to the steakhouse and I didn't understand the Italian steakhouse concept where you get a steak and they give you a side of spaghetti with it.
You probably went to Cascio's.
It wasn't Cascio's, but it was a place that was similar.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, there's lots of those places like that. Cascio's, which opened in 1946, which is on 10th, is still around.
Yeah.
And still does well and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, you can get, you know, my standard going to get the little smaller steak for lunch and have some mostaccioli on the side with that or whatever. And maybe get some toasted ravioli and all this other kind of stuff. These are kind of like Omaha traditional things.
As a fat man, I appreciate the fare in Omaha.
So there's that, and there's obviously some high-end steakhouses. You know, Passport, Omaha Prime, those were all, you know, great ones. You know, great, great high-end prime steakhouses. So there's those are there. Zesto's was the great ice cream stand there at right across the street from the old Rosenblatt, and people love the shakes and the ice cream and all that sort of stuff. Zesto still exists.
Apparently, it's moved closer to the ballpark.
They have a stand right by the ballpark,
but apparently, I guess they moved it closer now. There's one.
I don't know how they could get much closer.
Exactly. I don't know how you could. But
the unfortunate thing about the one down there is it was very limited in its menu. It was like one or two milkshakes and it was like one or two cones. The one there up on 10th by the ballpark, or 13th by the ballpark, had like 52 different milkshakes and all this different. And they still have one up on the northwest side off Loop 680. I've been to all these places over the time, so I know. So that was a good place. So there's all this good old school prime rib place way out on the west side of town. At 114th and Dodge is Jericho's.
Yeah.
Spelled without the H, spelled different than like Jericho Sims, J-E-R-I-C-O apostrophe. So an old school prime rib place with the old leather furniture in there, lots of Nebraska football memorabilia on the wall, and, you know, it's a good prime rib thing, and been there a few times as well.
I went with Tom Chattel to some really good wing place on the kind of the outskirts of Omaha.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then there's the really good burger place, too, around the corner, Dinkers, which is around there. So, anyway, there's
a lot of good food in Omaha.
A lot of good food in Omaha and breakfast places. Now, there's a diner down near the old market area of Omaha. Been there before, and that's really nice. But the standard bearer, really, for breakfast in Omaha was to go to another place owned by a Canelia, Tony Canelia.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they were all connected, cousins, this, that, whatever. And it was called Leavenworth Cafe. Now, it was on Leavenworth Avenue, L-E-A-V-E-N-W-O-R-T-H, like the prison, Leavenworth, you know, Leavenworth Avenue. But it was spelled like the number 11, Leavenworth Cafe. And it was on the corner of Leavenworth and 24th, I believe. And go there, and they had great breakfast. And
you
told
me about this place.
Yeah.
For my first trip.
And they had cinnamon toast and all this other kind of stuff. I'd been told by locals, and I'd gone there, and a lot of the media would go there well, and, you know, you get good omelets and bacon and eggs and all stuff, and they would feature cinnamon toast. Mm-hmm. You could get that and all this other kind of stuff. They had one other menu item. I wasn't that partial to it because I'm not a real big biscuits and gravy guy, but I know many, many people who were.
Myself included.
Yourself included. Thomas Dick, who was the former media relations director for Longhorn Baseball and also went over to Texas A&M. Every time he went, he always got this same dish every time.
Now, let me preface this by saying I forgot what the name of this dish was.
How could you forget that?
Because the name was irrelevant. I just remember how good it was.
Yeah. The name of the dish was the Robert E. Lee. And that's what, because it was excuse me, mainly with a nod to Southern stuff. That's why it was called that. So last night, I get the text from Jeff going, "Did you hear that Leavenworth Cafe closed?" And I said, no. And I thought, my first thought was, it didn't recover from COVID.
That was my first thought.
It didn't recover from the pandemic. Okay. So I go online to look it up, and I see that it didn't close down because of COVID.
Yeah.
No, it closed down because there were protesters protesting the naming of that one breakfast item.
Oh, wow.
The Robert E. Lee. And so they demanded that it be changed, and the owner at the time met with them and agreed to change the name. But then negotiations broke down when they demanded that the dish be named after a civil rights leader or something like that. And then it just went from there. And then the owner said, you know what? I'm old and I'm going to just retire.
There was like an entire, and I'm not joking, there's an entire New York Times expose.
Yes.
About the Omaha riots last summer or the Omaha protest that turned violent. And there are some unsavory Facebook posts involved.
Yep. Yep.
And apparently, as you said, during the negotiations to this, the Leavenworth owners agreed to donate money. Craig, I can't remember the name of the charity, but there's a Malcolm X Foundation that's in Omaha, based in Omaha.
Yep.
But the amount of the foundation wasn't up to snuff for some of the protesters, so they, on behalf of the local official negotiating the terms to stop protesting in front of the restaurant, declined the offer because it wasn't enough money, and the protest began again. So it became, you know, I remember hearing about there were issues in Omaha last summer, as there were protests in various parts across the country. I had no idea until I read the story that Leavenworth Cafe was at maybe the epicenter of all of this.
It was certainly a big flashpoint of it, and it ended up closing down for good 1 year ago this week. 1 year ago this Thursday, to be exact, June 17th. Closed down. Never to open again. So, if you're going to Omaha, don't put that on your list.
You'll just have to take my word for it how good the biscuits
the were. Robert E. Lee. He had the Robert E. Lee.
Because you could get, I had like the sausage patties, but you could get the sausage gravy on top
for
of
those
it.
Who just can't get enough sausage.
Oh, man. So good.
There are other good breakfast options in Omaha. I've had those, and there's lots of other places as well. So we'll mention some other ones. But, yeah, that's what happened.
Can't believe we canceled biscuits and gravy, Craig.
Yeah. Somebody says, Italian steakhouse? You mean like Sparks X Steakhouse? Ask Paulie Castellano about those. Somebody else said, do you remember as far back as when they would do the alert on television and show the big chief's head with the headdress? That I don't remember, but I do remember the...
Like Wahoo McDaniel?
Yeah. So somebody else asking, the only one having signal issues. There are some things that they're working on right now. I will tell you that.
Okay.
So there are some signal things that are happening. I can always recommend the app. Certainly, I know that you may not be in a position to do that at the time, or online listening. You may not be where you could do that online. So I get that. Understand. They are working on that right now. So it's not you, Ergadar, Matt, and it's not you, one or two others. So that's, somebody says, you guys right now being overrun by a country station out of Sioux Falls, Iowa.
CB asked if there were any monuments or memorials to Augie in Omaha. None that I'm aware of.
No.
But if you go to the site of the old Rosenblatt, there is a nice little setup they've got there. I think, what is it, Craig? Like a wiffle ball field?
Yeah, kind of? Or youth. Yeah, it might be that. And you have to remember, CB, that it got to an unfortunate point with Augie, with the people in Omaha. And I was explaining this last night to my youngest son. There was a time, you have to trust me on this, there was a time when if Texas went to Omaha, it was celebrated. People up there were very, very good. The first time I went to Omaha, 19 years ago, 2002, Longhorns won the national championship that year. The first time I went up there, opening ceremonies when they march in the teams, Longhorns got a rousing cheer from the faithful there in Omaha. And that year, you had Texas was in it and Nebraska was in it. there, and the Nebraska fans, and I would run into them across town and said, "Hey, Big 12, yeah, let's go if the Huskers," and they were on opposite sides of the bracket. So hopefully Texas and Nebraska can meet for the national championship. So it was like that first couple of years, and that I went up, 02 and 03. In 04, when Texas got to the national championship series and got swept by Cal State Fullerton, we talked about that yesterday. And it took a long time to get through all of this and get the actual chronological breakdown with the accounts of all those who were there, including myself, including Keith Moreland, who was there on the field and saw this with his own eyes. That, you know, the Longhorns go into the dugout, game ends, celebration on the field. Fullerton, they're dogpiling, doing all that kind of stuff, and the Longhorns are sitting there. And you know, is there going to be a handshake line or whatever? They're sitting there, and then the celebration continues, and there's players from Fullerton who are scraping up dirt from the infield and putting it in bags and stuff like that. So at that point, this had gone on for a solid 10 minutes. The team then goes into the locker room. So they go into the locker room. Dennis Pope, who's with the NCAA at the time, goes into the locker room, and I talked about this with Augie Garrido on the flight back. He said, "Craig, as God is my witness," Dennis Pope comes back and says, into the locker room, said, "Are you guys coming out for the trophy presentation?" And Augie said, he goes, "I had no idea there was a second place trophy in that they presented at the time." And he said, "Are we supposed to come out?" And the response he got was, "Well, there's this second place trophy," and his voice kind of trails off. And Augie said, "I swear to you, I asked him, what do you want us to do, Dennis? Do we have to come out?" And he said, "Well, you don't have to." He said, "Well, then we're not going to come out." So we didn't come out, and then Augie gets ripped, and the program gets ripped, the poor sports, they don't come out. Richard Justice wrote he should be fired.
I mean, there was all kinds of goofy, PTI, crazy PTI, Kornheiser, things. And Wilbon were saying Augie should be fired over this. Yeah. I said, "Well, you're showing your knowledge or lack thereof of college baseball if that's your knee-jerk reaction."
But yeah.
It was a massive deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And CB said he remembers when it went national. Absolutely. So they didn't come out. That was the real turning point right there. The next year when Texas came and won the national championship, they were booed mercilessly. Augie was booed mercilessly, and the opening ceremonies came in. He kind of flashed hook them after they were all booing him, and it never changed after that. Added to that, two other factors. One, Texas was in the process of going 9-1 against Nebraska in football during all of that. Two, Nebraska ultimately leaves for the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. My son lived and worked up there for 3 years in Omaha, 15, 16, and 17, and tells me, he said, the animosity for Texas knows no bounds up there. So it's there and it's real. So that it was starting to change a little bit, but the 04 thing changed. And by the way, every time after that, I'll never forget in 09 when Texas lost to LSU, Augie's like, "Nobody move." We're going to be here for the closing ceremony. He's like, "I didn't know there was a second place trophy or whatever." So it was like, "Nobody move." And by the way, the NCAA also changed and defined its policy and put it down there and said second place teams will remain in the dugout until the celebration is done. And then there's a second place trophy presentation and all that. But as was brought up to me, do you see a second place trophy given in the national championship game in basketball?
No.
Do you see one awarded in football?
No.
So it's different, just in the way that the College World Series is different from the other national championship events as well. It's a two-week event that unfolds, you know, over time and plays out.
It is I'll tell you this, it doesn't matter if you're a Texas fan or not, you owe it to yourself to make Omaha a bucket list item. I'm upset that I never got to go to a College World Series at the old Rosenblatt, but still, being there in 14 and being there, Craig, we were there for a good week.
Yeah.
Because they got to the winner-take-all semifinal against Vanderbilt that they lost in extra innings.
Yep.
And it's a hell of a time. And again, you owe, as a sports fan, you owe it to yourself to put a trip to Omaha on your bucket list for the College World Series.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Anyway, so there it is. There's all of that. So coming up, we do have another edition of The Notebook, and we'll continue with Light the Tower here on The Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, live, local, and digital on The Horn app and at hornfm.com.
It's okay to sing.
Light the Tower with Craig Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel.
Yeah, that's it. And I know a lot of you are probably feeling that it's like that with the air signal going on. I did get a little clarification on stuff. Hopefully it shan't last long. It is an atmospheric condition called, let me make sure I got it right, tropospheric propagation. That's what tropospheric induction propagation. That's what I was told that what it's called. It's a combination of some atmospheric environmental things. One has something to do with tropical activity in the Gulf, and it is and it's cooler air, warmer air. Anyway, it's messing with radio waves and stuff like that. So there's some of that there, and hopefully it'll pass through and they'll be able to do that. They're trying to make some technical adjustments. So for those of you, we appreciate you bearing through.
The Twitch numbers jumped, so it's probably people watching it on Twitch.
Okay. Somebody else said, went to the last World Series at Rosenblatt. I did that one on Westwood One. South Carolina with Whit Merrifield beating UCLA with Garrett Cole and Trevor Bauer. That one, it said, stopped in Oklahoma City on the way back in an RV versus resort. They asked us if we'd ever been to the Women's College World Series. We hadn't. They said, you can see the stadium lights from here. Been going to the women's ever since, sitting directly behind home plate. Thank you, Concordia, Kevin.
How many places could you list off that you would rather be than an RV park anywhere in the state of Oklahoma?
Our man CB says, hey, you're all clear on the app.
That's what good. I'm talking about, CB.
There you go.
Horn app, hornfm.com.
There you go.
And clear listening.
He remembers those old things. You've got mail. You'd have those things, too, that would happen there. We're ready to mail it right in to you. And Big Mike likes the fact that you were rolling in with Red Bones, come and get your love there on that. And Phil says the AM is loud and clear.
Sweet.
AM 1260. So that's loud and clear as well. Time now for The Notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Tours. Go to cptours.com.
You know, I got so caught up, Craig, yesterday. Had so much baseball to talk and finishing the Blitz. I forgot our fun fact of the day because yesterday
yes.
We were 82 days away from kickoff. So not 82, a whole number, but I'll just remind you that Bijan Robinson averaged 8.2 yards per carry last year to set the school single season record.
For so we're 82, yeah?
Rushing attempt. Today we're at 81.
81. Pat Fitzgerald.
Yeah, that's
Southwest Conference championship team.
Safe to say, Craig, maybe the top. Well, it's debatable, but in the conversation for the top tight end in school history before the run of Bo Scaife, David Thomas, Jermichael mm-hmm. Finley.
Yes,
he was in that conversation.
Absolutely.
For sure. Yeah, so we're at 81 days today. A lot of good Longhorns have worn 81. Shane Dronette wore 81. Mm-hmm. Pat Fitzgerald, like you mentioned. Mike Jones, who? just got to remember that
yes, sir.
Mike Jones' most memorable contribution to Texas was, as some Texas fans will say, a touchdown against Nebraska that you could have timed with a sundial.
Absolutely.
But it happened.
He got 1999, Nebraska came in number 3 in the country. Texas won that game. That was also memorable. That was the night of the Naked Bongo playing for Matthew McConaughey.
Yes, it was. Casey Hampton had a stupid number of tackles in that game, if mm-hmm. I'm remembering right. Him and as good as that Nebraska offensive line was, good luck trying to run it on Texas, trying to run in the, mm-hmm. in the teeth of that Texas defense, Sean Rogers and Casey Hampton. Sam Acho also wore 81 during his
career. Yes, he did.
When he won the award, did it change from the Campbell? Was it the Dratty and then became
Dratty.
The Campbell by the time he won it?
I think so.
Okay.
I think that's right.
It's basically your academic Heisman for those of mm-hmm. you. Sam Ellinger was a finalist for that award last year. So 81 days until kickoff. Let's talk about this Texas roster, Craig. And this
yes.
is something, you know, we've got some time today to do it, but this is something that's kind of an ongoing deal. I mentioned Chris Hummer's development rate article, his ongoing study at 24/7 Sports. is one of my favorite articles, probably my favorite article that comes out across the network all year. Right up there is Bud Elliott, Bud Trek's blue chip ratio. Basically, in the BCS era, to win a national championship, you've got to sign more 4- and 5-star prospects than you do 2- and 3-star prospects. Now, I know there's a lot of folks out there saying, well, wasn't J.J. Watt an unranked guy and a 2-star? Wasn't Colt McCoy a 3-star? Sure, but for every one of those guys you find, there's 100 of them that never make any kind of a dent in a college football program. And, Craig, would you like to know who's atop the blue chip ratio in 2021? And it gives you a really crystal clear picture on where the college football landscape is.
Sure.
Leading the blue chip ratio, and this is the percentage of 4- and 5-star signees on your roster for 2021, Alabama, 84% of Nick Saban's roster is made up of 4- and 5-star guys. And I heard Bud was
knocked
on the
knock me over with a feather.
You know, the Longhorn Blitz podcast is up. You can get that anywhere you get your podcast. Just search Horns 24/7. But another really good college football podcast, Trey Scott does the 24/7 Sports College Football Daily podcast. It's like a, you know, a 15 or so minute podcast every day, really good college football discussion, especially during this downtime where we're looking forward to the start of the season and we're about a month out from media days going on. But he had Bud Elliott on, and Bud said basically if Nick Saban would stop issuing scholarships right off the bat to specialists, yeah, that percentage would be higher because your specialists are no more than 3-star guys and they're killing the blue chip ratio for getting to where it should be.
Hurting the average.
Georgia is at 80%, and we're getting to one of those crapper get off the pot seasons for Kirby Smart. Like, as much talent as they have, you got to break through at some point or you're going to stop getting that insane amount of talent. Ohio State, 79%, and coming in at number 4, shocker, Clemson at 67%. So in terms of percentage of 4- and 5-star recruits making up your roster, the 4 highest compositions of anybody in the country, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson. Does it sound like probably what your preseason top 25 is going to be? Oh, and by the way, right below those schools at 66%, LSU, Oklahoma, Florida, and Texas at 66%. And you say, well, 66% blue chip ratio, like, what is that? Well, basically, like I said, the floor, the minimum threshold you need to cross. And Bud's even admitted, you know, with the college football playoff expanding, if somebody were maybe to go on a Cinderella run, it could, you know, shoot this theory. It could kind of break through that glass ceiling. You've also got, there's been a couple of schools that have come close to doing it. Oregon, the year they lost to Ohio State in the first CFP year with Marcus Mariota, their blue chip ratio was about 48%, so they almost did it. Clemson, the first time they lost to Alabama with Deshaun Watson, the blue chip ratio for that team was like 48, 49%. So those are the two schools that have come the closest to having a sub-50% blue chip ratio and breaking through and winning a national championship. But basically every national champion since Bud started tracking this right around 2011 is when he really started tracking, everybody's been at least 50% or better. So Texas at 66% right there with LSU, Oklahoma, Florida. You're saying, okay, how does that balance out? Remember that LSU roster a couple of years ago, Craig? They won a national championship with that you and I both saw up close and personal that set all kinds of NFL draft high watermarks. That LSU roster had a 64% blue chip ratio.
Really?
So this Texas roster, and this is what I like about Sark coming in and saying, look, this is a talented roster. There are pieces to work with. You've got a higher percentage of blue chip guys on this roster than Ed Orgeron had in 2019 at LSU. Now, granted, your quarterback situation, you don't have that Joe Brady, Joe Burrow combination and, you know, everything, the offensive juggernaut that LSU had. But you start looking around, Craig, at some of those pivotal positions we talk about. The offensive line, you've got it. Last I checked, I think you've got 8 or 9 blue-chip offensive linemen in this program. Again, that's guys that were 24/7 Sports composite 4- or 5-star guys. You've got 2 4-star quarterbacks, one of whom is going to be your starter, either Casey Thompson or Hudson Card. You've got a running back. We just talked about Bijan Robinson. He was a 24/7 Sports composite 5-star, the number one ranked running back in the country in the class of 2020. That wide receiver group, why it frustrates me so much, you've got a lot of blue chip talent in that group. Pretty much you've got blue chip talent in your 2-deep on offense at every position except tight end.
Right.
And even then, you know, you kind of know what you've got. At least you know what you got with Caden Brewer. And Me personally, I feel like I know what Texas has in Jared Wiley, at least what the potential is there. But you got blue chip talent all over the place. The interior defensive line, maybe the strength of this football team, Keandre Coburn, Alfred Collins, a lot of guys, Vernon Broughton, a lot of guys that are going to make up your interior, even guys further down the depth chart, like, you know, a Myron Warren was a, you know, fits that mold. So you've got a lot of guys in that interior defensive line that were blue chip guys coming out of high school. DeMarvion Overshown is a blue chip guy. When you talk about the central nervous system of your defense, Jaron Thompson and BJ Foster also fit that mold. So you've got blue chip talent up and down this roster. And the blue chip ratio fits right along in with Chris Hummer's development rate study. Getting top end talent has not been the problem for Texas. We're long past the point, Craig, where we were back in kind of 2009, 2010. And I was covering recruiting exclusively at the time when Mac had those classes where you were loading up on guys. I remember one junior day, I think they got 13 guys. I think it was the 2011 class. 13 guys commit on a junior day weekend. Basically, when you have that many guys, when you fill up basically half your class in one weekend, that means your evaluations have been done most likely before those guys ever played a down of football.
True.
As juniors. Your evaluations were in the can, which in some instances that can be good because you're getting a head start on some elite talent, but in some cases that's bad because maybe now you're recruiting guys that are physically topped out. So you're long past that point of, if there are, in other words, there are fewer evaluation misses. Your misses now are guys that are either transferring out or injuries or what have you. But you can look down the list. There are very few four-star or five-star guys Texas gets now where you watch them or hear about them in a practice and you're like, oh, man, I don't know if that guy's ever going to play. Fewer and fewer of those guys. So there's talent on this roster. Now it's up to Steve Sarkisian and the staff to go develop it and turn it into NFL talent, and that's when you start taking a step forward. But basically, and somebody asked, where's Texas A&M? Texas A&M's right on that cusp there. They were kind of in the mid to upper 40s under Kevin Sumlin, but with the way Jimbo Fisher has recruited lately, they're up to 61% in terms of their blue chip ratio. Now, Michigan at 58, Auburn at 56, Oregon's up to 56, Penn State, Notre Dame, Miami, USC. Those are the programs that are going to have a good chance to compete for and win a national championship based on their blue chip ratio. Not to say that schools sub 50% can't do it, but to all the folks, Craig, on signing, they say, oh, well, this doesn't matter. No.
It matters.
This number right here proves that it matters. Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, Dabo Swinney, Ryan Day, Steve Sarkisian, they will all tell you, yes, that very much matters.
Okay. There's the notebook for this hour. Somebody quickly before we get to the break asking about the decommit of the wide receiver from Oklahoma, the decommit that happened yesterday.
Jordan Hudson, yeah. from Garland, yeah.
Said where did he end up going? He hasn't picked.
He's just decommitted from Oklahoma. Yeah. Mike Roach was reaching out to him last night. It does sound like Texas is going to, you know, look into that recruitment, but really, really talented wide receiver out of Garland, Jordan Hudson.
Yeah. Somebody said, Jeff, if you're a fan of biscuits and gravy, have you ever tried homemade butter bath biscuits?
What is that?
I don't know.
Butter bath?
Yeah. Butter bath.
Just okay. Like melt like a huge like gallon drum of butter and just dump it all over everything.
Maybe. Could be that.
It's the Ulysses S. Grant plate.
Yeah, there you go. All right. We'll be back to wrap up Light the Tower here on the Horn.
Hey, it's Eric Raines.
Craig Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel. Light the Tower.
Just a couple of minutes here before we get wrapped up on the program. And again, to review what will happen tomorrow. There's one thing else you got to know. And, you know, we just got done, Snoop, with the UIL State Baseball Championships, right?
Yes.
Track and field, softball, it's all in the books, right? Not so fast. The 2021 UIL Robotics State Championships, the first division championships, will take place this coming weekend at the Alamo Dome, San Antonio. So get a hold of Logan Lawrence if you want credentials for that.
Okay.
The Robotics State Championship.
I expect that to be covered stem to stern on,
on Flex.
Flex ATX. And on
find
the,
out
on
which
the
schools are the best at robotics in this
state. Does that count towards the Lone Star Cup? It has to.
I think
right?
It does, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So just saying.
I'll look into it.
Okay, so tomorrow I'll be here, obviously, for the program, and then off to Omaha with the Longhorn baseball team. And so on Thursday, Jeff will be over at the Fairmont for
yes.
The luncheon for the Greater Austin Area Boys and Girls Clubs.
Right.
And Steve Sarkisian will be the keynote speaker there. Sark will be there for that, but you're going to host the show over there.
Yes. Friday will be – here's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to wrap up our trading card Friday because the following Friday – I may be en route to Omaha. Mm-hmm. I may be in Omaha. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. And I know the following Friday I'm on vacation.
Right.
So in terms of the stuff with our partnership with Brown Eye Clothing, we will mm-hmm. wrap that up on Friday.
And I do expect to be on the program back on Friday.
Yeah.
Thursday I won't be because you guys will be on remote
right.
and the way that works.
Including a product that I have been, it is so high end, I have been nervous to have it in my possession.
Ooh.
Courtesy of wow. my friends at Brown Eye Clothing.
This has nothing to do with the 96 pounds of cocaine that were seized at the airport there the other day.
I cannot confirm or deny
oh, okay.
my involvement in that.
Okay, all right. I would hope you would deny any involvement in that. But, okay. All right. We invite you to stay tuned. At least the skins part of Shirts and Skins. Trey Elling will be up next with
CDC
special guests.
CDC at 2 o'clock.
Yeah. Get ready for that. And... for our man behind the glass, our producer, Snoop Daniel, and for my co-host, Jeff Howell, I'm Craig Way. Thanks for joining us. We'll visit with you tomorrow, 2 o'clock, right here on Light the Tower. 10 o'clock.
Texas baseball is going.